Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Matt Neely. Good to have you, Matt.
Good to be here, Bill.
Always a pleasure to see Matt Neely. John's off today, so Matt is ably on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday, February the 4th, 2025. Yesterday, we tied the all-time record high, which goes back to February of 1925. And it was a very, I guess it was a very warm week in 1925, because today is also the record high.
Looking at 84.
Huh?
Looking at 84 is the forecast today.
So I think we might be close, or maybe break the record today. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios in the Bustos Media Center. We're in central Tucson. We have five radio stations under one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Last month, we began our 15th year of our radio program, and my 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. And we'll have our worldwide live listening always available for you and all of the podcasts of our program at my website, buckmastershow.com. And when we do our telephone interviews, and that number 790-2040, that's our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we like to check in with the professor of economics and director of the Office of the University Economist at Arizona State University, Professor Dennis Hoffman, whose sponsored projects include, and he's been at this a long time, since 1982, the construction and maintenance of the very important revenue forecasting model that is used by the Executive Budget Office for the state of Arizona. Professor Hoffman, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Bill. How about yourself?
Doing well. We're off to a very warm start this week, and I assume this is kind of in the wintertime, actually, Tucson can be a little warmer than Phoenix. Probably the only time of the year that happens.
Right. And, you know, one of the irritants for me, I don't know about down there, but the weather forecasters on the nightly local news seem to celebrate this. They're just all so happy that there's yet another week without rain. And I think these are people that haven't lived in our state as long as we have, Bill.
Yeah, I think they just came in from Albuquerque or Abilene or somewhere. Anyway, we do need rain. We had a little bit last week, but not enough. Let's begin with all the talk around tariffs. The CEO of the UBS, kind of mega giant banking organization, is saying today that he's very concerned about these tariffs. And he says that a tariff escalation could lead to recessions and inflationary pressure. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. There's plenty of evidence throughout history, including Smoot-Hawley in the early 30s, Bill, that just fanned the flames on the Depression. And we're not out of the woods yet. You know, some people want to scoff and just say, well, this is just a negotiating tactic and see what wonderful concessions we've just won. Well, first of all, I don't think the concessions were all that big, number one. I'm not sure they were worth what they did to the markets in one day. And the big one, of course, still looms, and that's China, and they have just retaliated. This is the fear that there's retaliations here. Mr. Trump apparently believes that there's a winner and a loser here, and he can be the winner. Not sure what the spoils of the game are, but that's what he believes. And the problem with trade is that you know, a tariff war and a trade war leads to two losers. We're both poorer as a result.
Professor Hoffman, would you have to go back to the 1930s to find a chief executive of this country who was enamored like this with the tariffs?
I think so. So historically, we had this problem, this debate in Congress over protectionism, and you know, from time to time, the folks that pushed protectionism got the majority of congressional the folks in Congress, and they passed protectionist tariff laws. And you know, after the Great Depression, we made the conscious decision to move more of that authority away from Congress to the executive, with the thought being that surely no executive branch official would embrace protectionism. I guess it's don't call me Shirley, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it happened.
Do you think that Trump sees this as more, he's enamored with it because he's always prided himself on being this big negotiator?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And negotiating for a business and, you know, dealing with subcontractors, if you're a real estate developer, is one thing. Negotiating country to country, where everybody wins from more trade and everybody loses from less trade, you know, that's just a different deal. And it's unfortunate. There's a lot of pro-growth policies, Bill, coming out of the administration. This is not one of them.
How are we doing with the state revenue forecasting for the state of Arizona now that we've got the lawmakers in session? They're going to want to see the numbers, Professor Hoffman.
Well, we're going to have a year, I think, though, where there's not going to be a lot of dispute on revenues. Spending may be a little different, but on revenues, the revenue picture between the Joint Legislative Budget Committee and the executive branch appears fairly well aligned. Revenues are flowing in nicely. I would say that sales taxes are a laggard, and I look at all of these things, and I'm sure a lot of the folks at the JLBC does as well. Sales taxes have just lagged. They've lagged far lower than what, you know, wage growth and employment growth would suggest. But if you look at the latest numbers, Bill, unlike 2 years ago, commodity prices are actually falling in the state. And so that's, you know, that's a headwind for retail sales collection. So we're spending, we're buying goods, and we're buying goods maybe at a greater clip than we've been to keep up with our incomes, but they just cost a bit less than they did last year, not 5 years ago, but last year. And that changes the, you know, the pace of TPT collections. So we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Let's go to our live line, 790-2040, which is presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Paul has called us on the live line. He has a question for Professor Dennis Hoffman up at ASU. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, I was listening to your professor there concerning the tariffs, but in my way of thinking, that is not really a law affecting tariffs as much as it is stopping this fentanyl poison from coming in. Many people in my business family have passed away because of drugs being brought in from Canada and Mexico. And this professor seems to not even be aware of that. All he thinks about is money. What does he think?
Oh, I definitely have a response to that, Paul, but thank you for the question. I think fentanyl is a huge problem. Drugs are a huge problem. We should be negotiating ways between the three countries, Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. We should be at the table every day, every week, and we should have been for months, and we should be for months going forward. We don't need the saber rattling around tariffs to serve as a catalyst for that. That's diplomacy. That's what should be going on all the time. I don't think there's any hesitancy from Mexico or Canada to do that. Why didn't we work on that first instead of leading with a policy that's just going to create ill will? Have you heard the news from Canada? People don't want to buy American in Canada anymore. They don't want to buy from the bully anymore. That's not going to help our trade deficit situation. That's not going to help our relationship. We need diplomacy. We need a steady hand at the till, and we need to fight drugs. You're absolutely right on that point.
Yeah, and we just had a listener send me a comment via the Facebook avenue. How does a tariff stop fentanyl, and are you going to tax the cartels? Yeah, that
exactly. We need diplomacy. We need efforts, military efforts, police efforts. We need enforcement efforts. But we've got to cut off the demand, Bill.
Yeah,
fentanyl is a demand problem. There's going to be a supply that will meet our demand if our demand continues. And it's a horrible issue. It is, as Paul pointed out, it's devastated many families. We've got to address it. But, you know, beating people over the head with tariffs may not be the best way to go about it.
All right, Professor. Professor Hoffman, always a pleasure. We'll talk with you again in early March. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Dennis Hoffman from ASU, where he's professor of economics and director of the Office of the University Economist. Shelley Fishman is with me here in studio. And two thumbs up from Shell as we plow along here on a Tuesday afternoon. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Shelley Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelley via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shelley Fishman is with us.
Happy summer, Bill.
Happy summer. How are you doing today,
Shelley? Doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well. So I was looking at some of these numbers that you presented me with NASDAQ had a gangbusters year in 2024, 35%.
Yeah. You know, the 2024 numbers, you have to choose an arbitrary date. And so the calendar year is an arbitrary date. If we go back 2 weeks earlier, all of the indices were actually even higher. But what happened was President-elect Trump at the time was talking about tariffs, mm-hmm. and talking about some other things that were going to cause disruptions both in the worldwide trading and also for very specific things like violating his own treaty with Canada and Mexico. That spooked the markets a little bit, and they backed off the highs that were actually associated a little bit with the election of Mr. Trump in November. So the Dow for the year in 2024 was only up 14.24%. It had been up almost 19% mm-hmm. earlier. The S&P, which was up in a typical year around 11%, dropped down to about a 6% gain, which is below the 50 or 60-year average. But the NASDAQ, which went gangbusters all year, still came in with a 35% gain for the year. Now, so the year passed is the year passed. That is what it is. These somewhat lower numbers for the beginning of the year in January 1st will actually help us at the end of the year because we'll have a lower number to grow from.
Mm-hmm.
It's an entirely arbitrary measurement to look at the beginning of the year, the end of the year, et cetera. If you're an investor, first of all, you're hopefully looking at longer periods than 1 year, but also you're reacting to trends along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's curious that President Trump ran on what he said were that the prices were too high, and then he admitted that these tariffs would cause some pain. Wow, how much? I mean, it's weird.
It is. Well, Dr. Hoffman, I think, said it best, that the only economic policy that has been put forward so far is a lose-lose. Mm. It's a lose for us, and it's a lose for our trading partners.
Yeah, who wins in a trading war? No one,
wins in a trading war.
I mean,
now, but the bigger issue is that we become undependable mm-hmm. in international circles in terms of keeping our word, maintaining the viability of the treaties we've signed. But also what happens when we keep on throwing chaos into the marketplace is that countries very naturally, to preserve their own economies, look elsewhere for markets.
Mm-hmm.
And so it weakens our role in the world. Now, and we've talked about tariffs before, if you're using tariffs to try to onshore manufacturing mm-hmm. that you've lost, mm-hmm. there's a timing issue. It takes a long time, several years, to rebuild those factories, get people trained and manned and staffed, to pick up that slack because tariffs are going to reduce the imports. Now, the good thing is they're going to reduce the imports. The bad thing is there's still demand. So while there's demand and we're not producing what we need to produce, prices go up.
Mm-hmm.
Once we've staffed up and built what we need to build, then prices will come back down again. But by that time, who knows what could have happened?
Because we had it, and I believe we still have it, the North American Free Trade
yes.
Agreement.
Well, it's not NAFTA anymore.
No, it isn't. Yes. But I was going to say that was the foundation that actually President Trump, in his first term, renegotiated that.
Yes.
And I believe
it wasn't a huge change from NAFTA.
But we were still under that now.
And he bragged like crazy about how he fixed the Clinton problems with NAFTA, and we now had the kind of, strong American trading policy that we needed with our two largest trading partners, Canada and Mexico. And then he simply said, I don't like those anymore, so goodbye. You get me started on this, mm-hmm. I go a little nuts because it's not just the short-term problems that we have to deal with. It's the longer-term problems. As long as the world is as integrated economically as it has been for the past 40 or 50 years, you got to work within that system.
Especially the auto industry with Canada.
Oh, my gosh.
The parts and the way these automobiles
and
Mexico
countries,
to a certain extent, too. It's really a work by committee.
Exactly.
So,
and I know from a political perspective, the last thing the Trump administration wants to do is give credit to the Biden administration for leaving them a really good economy.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
He left them a really good economy. Now, some people, you know, are suffering from the remains of inflation, but even that is a little exaggerated, I think. We look, you know, we got some year-end numbers last week. The GDP growth for the year looks like it'll settle in at around 2.5%, which is a click or two lower than we thought it was going to be, but still one of the best GDP growths in the century so far.
Mm-hmm.
Personal consumption expenditures grew by 2.5% in the fourth quarter, right in line with expectations, and higher than the third quarter of 2.2%. We don't see those kinds of growths in personal expenditures in normal, you know, median economic performance. These are all very, very good numbers. And we know that employment is at, you know, full employment. The big problem is we can't fill the jobs we have.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to Governor Hochul of New York. Mm-hmm. She has 500,000 jobs she can't fill,
mm-hmm.
and they're high-quality jobs.
Mm-hmm.
As a country, we have almost 5 million jobs that we can't fill. We've got to get those jobs, we've got to get people trained and mobile enough so that they can take those jobs. If not, what industry is going to do is find ways to automate those jobs out of existence.
Right. Yes, there may not be jobs for these people.
If you care about the economy and you care about people and people's jobs and getting good-paying jobs, you will worry about things like training and a national service corps and the things you've got to do to make people who maybe are not headed to college, headed to post-high school training, and get them really geared up for what is going to be a huge revolution in our economy, fueled by AI, but also just fueled by the kinds of automation that we have seen working more and more in manufacturing. So if we're going to take that stuff back from overseas, where their costs of labor are so low, the only way we can do that is by automating and filling those jobs with people who know how to design and run these automated factories. And I don't hear any of that from the Trump administration.
Well, you know, it makes for a good soundbite. I'm going to bring back these jobs onshore from other places. But, you know, that's not going to happen overnight. As you pointed out, that could be years down the road. And by that time, those jobs may be automated jobs.
During the first Trump administration, we actually lost jobs, even though he lies about it and says we gained jobs. We actually got some of those back, especially in the auto industry and some other industries during the Biden administration. But what Biden was able to do, especially with the CHIPS Act and he calls it Inflation Reduction Act, but it was actually an infrastructure act. We've got factories under construction now and that are planned that will really help with the manufacturing sector tremendously once they're finished and staffed. But again, it takes time. So a one-term president, even though he got some really good stuff done in the early years of his presidency, we're not seeing the effects of that yet. But, you know, economics is not a day-to-day discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Economics is for the medium and long term. You've got to make plans for those kinds of time frames. And if you do that, then the economy will be fine. If you're planning for just tomorrow and just the politics of it, then you're going to make a lot of mistakes because you're not looking over the horizon.
And then we've got the Fed. Who knows what they're probably just going to put the gears in neutral for a while, aren't they?
Well, you know, the Fed.
No movement up.
The Fed last
or down.
This month actually in January, decided no movement and basically said, look, the economy is still chugging along at a pretty good rate. We're afraid that if we start lowering rates, it is going to contribute to inflation. Now, I don't think that's true. I don't think this inflation had anything to do with interest rates. I think it had to do with supply chain problems and the pandemic. Nevertheless, what we are seeing from the Fed right now is a very conservative way of approaching this problem. They have two jobs to do. One job is full employment. The other is low inflation. We're not at their 2% rate. We're at about a 2.7, 2.8% rate, and they're concerned about that. What I'm concerned about is high interest rates for the housing industry, for auto loans, and major consumption for consumers, and also the high interest rates in credit card debt, which is, if you look at that, there's not a lot being written about it, but it's very alarming. Those are the things that I would like to see this administration really begin to deal with.
And you, where do you think a lot of the building manufacturing products come from? Canada.
No, Canada, you know, building products
from
Canada.
Canada,
and
yeah.
Guess who installs those building products? Immigrants. So, you know,
there you go.
Can I tell you?
All right, Shell, final thought here. I've got about five seconds.
I hope that there is enough pressure from people like Dr. Hoffman and myself and you and people who are not just looking at the politics of this, to put pressure on this administration to make the reforms necessary to really get this economy at a point where we are absolutely not just great again, but unattackably great.
Thanks, Shelley.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, where they're doing a demolition sale because the five buildings that house all that wonderful merchandise at Zocalo Village have got to go. They're going to be demolished because the buildings are in a floodplain. And so why take the time to move all the merchandise over to the new building? Just put it on sale. That's what Jen and Jack are doing, up to 50% off at Zocalo Village, located at 3384 East River Road, which is Zocalo Village, part of the Green Things family, on their 13-acre site. Family owned and operated since 1970. Check it out. Zocalo Village and Green Things. GreenThingsAZ.com is the website. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Joining me in studio, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture and a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. He served on the University of Arizona faculty and worked statewide since 1987. He's with me in studio. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Good, Bill. Thank you. How you doing?
Doing well. And there's that extensive article by Tony Davis of The Star about so many projects that are dependent, that have to do with water and the environment, are really on hold right now because we don't know what's going to happen with the federal government. Certainly anything that's under the category of green energy is now on hold.
That's my understanding as well. It was a good article by Mr. Davis in the Arizona Daily Star. I believe it was on Sunday. So it's a good reference for any of our listeners that might be interested in that. But yeah, that's a concern. That's a concern for a lot of folks in the West that are associated with our waterworks, irrigation districts, agricultural irrigation districts, municipalities, industry. There's a huge piece of allocation from that Infrastructure Act that was passed a few years ago that is intended to go into these infrastructure projects on things like the Colorado River to improve efficiency of delivery, CAP systems, et cetera, et cetera. So hopefully that changes, but yeah, there's a lot of concern about that right now, Bill.
And it comes at a time when the federal government is very much involved in the future of the Colorado River. You know, there's that feeling now out of Washington, everything associated with the federal government is bad. Well, when it comes to water and our future, this state and the states of the Colorado River Basin are tied to what the federal government is going to do about our water situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think what's happening right now is a good example of how that and why that's important and how that works out. You know, there's because of the drought for the past 23 years, the reduction of flows down the Colorado River, which averaged for most of the 20th century of about 14.5, 14.8 million acre feet of water. The river was allocated for over 15 or 16.5 million acre feet, so there was always a deficit there, but they being the Bureau of Reclamation, part of the federal government, Department of Interior, was able to manage that with the basin states. Now with this drought for the past 23 years, that flow has dropped to an average of about 12.5 million acre feet a year. So the conservation efforts have been put in place for the past almost 20 years now, but we're coming up at the end of the expiration of those new guidelines and rules in 2026. This is our last year, 2025. The states that are negotiating that, the basin states, have basically split off between the upper basin above Lee's Ferry and the lower basin, which is Arizona, California, and Nevada. And they're in opposition, lower basin versus upper basin. They haven't been able to come to a resolution in those negotiations. The way the laws are set is first to have the states work out their own problems, and if they can't, then the Department of Interior, Bureau of Reclamation, needs to step in by law. That's been ratified in the what we call the Law of the River, the Colorado River Compact of 1922, and then subsequent legislation and court rulings that have taken place since then. So that's where the federal government steps in to manage. Other than that, it's up to the states. But if the states can't work it out themselves, then the federal government takes over. It's not the other way around, as some people might think. The feds step in first and the states don't have a chance. States have been working on this, these basin states, for several years, knowing this deadline's coming. We're coming right up on it. So that's how the Bureau of Reclamation is going to fit. And that's why the appointment for the Secretary of the Interior and they, now the subsequent appointment for the Commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation will be very important in these types of discussions and negotiations.
And it comes at a time when we're in the middle of a drought that's been going on for over 20 years. Just take a look at how dry it has been here in Tucson.
Yeah. You know, you look at one of the ways to measure that is like, what's the level of water in these reservoirs, Lake Powell and Lake Mead, that can help keep us above those critical levels as identified by these drought contingency plans based on elevations of water at Lake Mead and Lake Powell. Well, that water primarily comes out of the watershed above Lake Powell in the mountains of the Rocky Mountains. Right now, you look at the snowpack, and I think I checked the other day, Bill, I think it's something a little about 84% of average. We're about where we were last year in terms of snowpack. And that was a fairly dry year. So that means we're not up to par or even the average with regard to the replenishment of these supplies in these reservoirs. So our conservation efforts are going to be very important, how those guidelines are set, who and when we take the cuts, and how that's done to be able to conserve this river. Because if we don't, these reservoirs continue to drop. And a few years ago, we were in a critical level approaching what they call dead pool.
Yeah.
And dead pool, you can't take water out. Dead pool, you can't take hydroelectric power out. So we want to conserve these dams, these reservoirs, to be able to provide that storage and also hydroelectric power.
And the winter has, up to January 1st, things were looking pretty good in the upper basin. And now it looks really well below normal in southern Utah and Colorado, and certainly across Arizona. The snowpack is so crucial, Jeff Silvertooth, for the river flows as the melting snows run off into the river gradually. And what's been happening with these continually high temperatures that we've had the last couple of years here in Arizona, that snow melts quickly.
It melts quickly, and the forest is the first crop to get a drink.
Right.
And that forest is thirsty, and it's going to take some of that water. And we have what we call the process, what's called sublimation, and it's when things are hot enough that the snow doesn't go from ice or from the frozen form to liquid form. It moves very quickly to the vapor form and evaporates off as well. So collectively, those things then reduce the flow that goes back into the watershed as liquid water that we can recover in these reservoirs on the main stem of the Colorado. So, yeah, all these factors, environmental factors, climatic factors, our management, our infrastructure, how we then conserve this water, all of these factors fit together. And it's a complex matrix, but it's very important that we manage it and we pay attention to it and we understand it. So that's where we are on the management of these watersheds right now in the West.
Jeff, we had the Attorney General Chris Mays with me on our Friday focus interview last Friday, and she was talking about something we've discussed on the program, Jeff Silvertooth, about the Saudi Arabian company up near Kingman that is growing alfalfa that is then shipped over to the Middle East. And Chris Mays actually used a very little used provision called, it was a nuisance law, to try to stop that operation, because generally they had been operating within the existing law, hadn't they, Jeff Silver?
Absolutely. They have not violated any law. They're doing everything appropriate.
What's their name? Photomax or something, the Saudi company that's doing that? The name of the company that...
Fondamonte.
Fondamonte.
Right, yeah. Right. No, they're perfectly legal within what they were doing. As a matter of fact, it's important to note, too, that of all the alfalfa hay that they ship over to Saudi Arabia, something like approximately 80% of that is not grown on their farm. They're buying it from other local farmers. The other thing, too, that's important to understand is that all of us in this country we're dependent on international markets, and global markets are a very important part of the agricultural economy. So our export products is very important to the agricultural economy as well as the United States economy as well. That gives us trade, parity, not parity, but trade currency, so to speak, for us to bring back in imported goods. Some years, we're actually a net importer of products into this country as opposed to a net exporter. The United States has always been a net exporter of this of agricultural products, and alfalfa hay happens to be one of those crops. It's just one of them. You know, of course, we think about the big staple crops like wheat and corn, soybeans, etc. You know, we've always wanted to maintain a strong export market. Well, these kinds of production systems that we're talking about here in Arizona that Fondamonte is involved with are part of that global economy. Now, they're taking that product to their country, rightfully so, legally, without any kind of like legal violations, and they're using the water in Arizona legally by the contracts that they have for these lands, and they're buying alfalfa crops to send to Saudi Arabia from other farmers. Now, if you and I were farming alfalfa hay in that area, I mean, I think we'd probably think that's a good deal. We have a market, and we're helping transport this product out of the state. So really what this comes down to is kind of a, I don't know, me as an agriculturalist, just, the way I interpret this is that it's kind of a twist on the reality that we're dealing with in agricultural economies, the global economies, and what we're doing in Arizona in terms of productions to match that. Also, I might add, there's a lot of companies, foreign investment companies that have land and property in Arizona, agricultural and non-agricultural as well. It's not just Fondamonte.
Yeah, she's also looking at a Minnesota-based company down in Cochise County that's also using local well water, and she's also thinking that this nuisance law could be applied to that area in Cochise County.
That's true. It's Riverview Farms. It's a large dairy operation based out of Minnesota, Morris, Minnesota. They have a large operation down here in Cochise County. The interesting thing there is that there's a perception you hear, and this is not true, that they've gone out and they've expanded new raw lands into agriculture. They're eating up new lands and they're taking water away. What they've done, like I want to say again, a majority of 75% or more of the lands that they have acquired and picked up are from other farmers that have sold out to them. And the reason other farmers are selling out is because their operations are marginal with regard to economic sustainability. They've sold to a company that can maintain those lands. What they've also done, and I can attest to this very directly as an agronomist here working in this state, they've improved the irrigation efficiencies of almost all of those lands. That's one of the most sophisticated irrigation management systems.
That's the first I've heard that.
Yeah, they're one of the most sophisticated irrigation systems in this entire region with regard to improvements they've made.
They're buying up a lot of the marginal kind of operations.
That's right.
Wow.
The lands that have been sold to them, you know, they're not portioning anybody out. They've picked up those lands and they've improved their capacity for production with their acquisition. They've invested. They put meters in all their wells. A lot of Arizona farmers have not done that, don't want to do that. They have because they know they have to manage that resource in a quantitative manner, and they've improved their efficiencies. They're trying to put things together right now, I know, so they can, you know, publicly document that, but it's a fact, Bill, that they've done a great job in terms of improving efficiency per unit area of land, and they're making good production with that with regard to dairy cattle production that they're involved with.
That's the other side of the story. First I've really heard that about that company, that they are doing some positive things for agriculture in this state.
Right, that's important to point out. I would say they're very good producers. They've improved that efficiency. They're very conscientious of that conservation effort. I can tell you that for sure. Most of those farmers that are farming down there, all of them that I know, I know a group, a coalition that represents over 90% of the acres in that Sulphur Springs Valley, and they can show you what the major efforts that they have done to conserve water in the past few years. As a matter of fact, many of them would suffer if that AMA, active management area, is imposed, goes as successfully imposed as the governor has suggested.
That may be coming very soon, by the way.
It may be, because they won't get credit for the conservation efforts that they've made to save water the past 5 years.
All right, more with University of Arizona agronomist Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. It's the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I want to send as many listeners as possible over to the Land of Enchantment, specifically Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And we send a lot of our listeners to that beautiful area. UA agronomist Jeff Silvertooth is with me. Jeff, you know that area very well. And it's a pretty area of New Mexico.
It is. It's beautiful. I love it out there, southeastern, western New Mexico.
Yeah, and you make the drive over there. You hit I-10, and you take a left at Lordsburg, and then go up to the mountain, and you get up to about 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation, and it's a delightful climate.
Beautiful country up there. Yes, sir.
Start Absolutely. Your planning for your trip over to Silver City by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Jeff Silvertooth is here. Dr. Silvertooth, University of Arizona agronomist. And we heard a lot about the Trump administration boasting they've released tons of water from the reservoirs of California to help LA, but I'm not sure it's really destined for LA, is it?
No, Bill, you know, this is another one of those cases. We talk about facts may be facts, but perceptions become people's reality. And in this case, the facts are that water was released from two dams, two reservoirs in the Tulare County, out of that Tulare Basin.
Right.
The Cahuilla Dam and the Success Dam. Collectively, they released, as that was stated in the administration's statements, it's like 5.6 billion gallons of water. Now, that's a lot of water, billion gallons of water. I mean, you're talking about billions of stuff. That sounds big. We usually think about volumes of water like that in terms of acre feet. There were about 4,000 acre feet that was released. That water did not go to L.A. There's no way it can.
No.
It's in California, kind of the southern half of the state. It dumps into mainly Tulare County and Kern County, that water does. But there's a mountain range called the Tehachapi Mountains, pretty prominent mountain range.
Yeah.
Water doesn't get to L.A. It does not do any good for L.A. Now, what that water was for is stored for
flood control. For agriculture in the San Joaquin Valley. And I know a little bit about this because I used to work early in my career in Visalia, which is the county seat for Tulare County. So that water's going out of those dams. You know what's going to happen this summer when they need the water?
4,000 acre feet short.
Yeah.
And that's why they do that, Bill. As waters come in, we just talked about the watersheds. The Sierra Nevada, the west side of the Sierra Nevada, deposit that water into those watersheds, those dams. It's stored. It's managed for flood control, and it's also managed for agricultural purposes. So that's their storage.
Yes.
We're talking about our storage in Lake Mead and Lake Powell for Colorado River. Well, we don't want to let every drop of water that you don't want to waste any water. So
I don't
that water
understand
basin
why
out,
they released it from those released from those two dams.
I can only speculate on that. Southern California, it looks like it's close to LA.
It looks like, yeah.
It enhances
it's
the
crazy.
Perception,
it
perhaps.
Is crazy.
But functionally speaking, that water doesn't get into the LA basin at all.
And we need to talk about the labor situation and the migrants who really are picking the vegetables and doing that. And we're in that season right now in the Imperial Valley and over by Yuma. I bet the folks you're talking to are very concerned.
Everybody in agriculture is always concerned about labor.
Yeah.
And labor in the United States, say, Bill, this is just a fact. We talk about people that are needing jobs and destitute. There are jobs in agriculture that people just don't pick up and take. The only ones that really pick up and take these jobs are our migrant workers. And it's hard work. It's work that's absolutely essential in these fields. And it's actually, a lot of times, a skilled labor force that can do that. So it's critically important to us to get these folks and provide this labor force the opportunity to come here and work and give us the opportunity to harvest and take care of these crops.
All right. Caller Robert has called us on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. Our Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's hear what Robert has a question for Professor Jeff Silvertooth. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, Jeff. I live in Tucson, but my family lives in Wisconsin. And I have my eye on a pipeline from the Great Lakes, which is the biggest natural water reserve in the hemisphere. What do you think about that?
Robert, that's a good question. You know, there's been a lot of discussion in this state and region the past several years about transporting water from other parts of the country into Arizona. Great Lakes, for example, being one, Mississippi River, Missouri Rivers being other options that have been considered. Those are theoretically good ideas. The things that they've run into, Robert, quite often with regard to complications is, you know, it takes just a lot of infrastructure to move that water. So it's going to, who's going to pay for it and how? Kind of comes back to the discussion we had earlier about the involvement of the federal government in these kinds of water work projects. Secondly, you know, there's a lot of legal aspects to that and a lot of states you have to cross. And particularly if you get into the arid West, everybody wants their piece of that water, you know. So It's a theoretically feasible idea. I think where they run into the problems is trying to get it taken care of with regard to funding, infrastructure, and of course then the legal improvements and get everybody to agree to that. So maybe it's something that we'll see later on down the road in the future, but people are still looking at it.
Could you imagine all the water rights they would have to, you know, buy up between the Great Lakes and here to the west?
Yeah, you know, all these, you know, if you take the same, say it's the same case with regard to the Missouri River, the Mississippi River, you know, every one of those states they're going to cross have some thirsty needs also. So, but you know, it's still theoretically feasible to do it. Maybe it's something we could do in the future, you know, there's a lot of these things like that. Probably some of the other desalinization and efforts on the west coast, which also take some, you know, a lot of money and infrastructure to do, could help us relieve some of our stresses in the short term. It's a good question, Robert. Thank you. I appreciate you bringing that up.
I was shocked to learn there are thousands of water companies that serve this country. This area is just the whole country is broken down to, most of them are very small water companies.
Yeah, little regional
yeah.
districts.
Yeah.
Regional districts working together. And it's very much the way it is here in Arizona. A lot of our water districts, irrigation districts, water management districts, based on region and the valleys and the geography of this state.
All right, Professor Jeff Silvertooth, any final words before we see you again in March? It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen with the federal government and how this is going to affect water.
Yes, I could see. I think it's safe to say things are moving fast, and there's a rapidly changing landscape. By the time you and I sit down again in a month,
who knows?
There's a lot of things that could transpire. So we'll hope for the best.
All right, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, always a pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.
Likewise, thank you.
A great rest of the day.
Thank you.
All right, on behalf of Professor Silvertooth and Matt Neely, who always does a great job, it's good to see Matt on the other side of the glass. Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.